Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome, Pewter Report readers, viewers, and listeners to a brand new edition of the Pewter Report podcast, energized by Celsius, the official energy drink of PewterReport.com and the Pewter Report podcast. Want to say hello to all the Pewter people that are joining us in the chat as we begin this Wednesday show, and we will continue to break down the press conference and conversation that we had with new Bucks offensive coordinator Liam Cohen, with a specific focus for today's show about how the Bucks offense will change. We'll also talk about some of the changes made to the coaching staff as there is a new offensive line coach joining the Buccaneers staff. I'm your host, Matt Matera. Joined with me is the face that runs the place at PewterReport.com, SR Scott Reynolds. Scott, how are we doing on this Wednesday afternoon?
We're doing good. It's fun to be able to talk about an offensive coordinator, and I think one that we're excited about after meeting him yesterday at the team facility and had a chance to talk to him twice, once in the press conference. Yeah. And then Liam Cohen gave us probably a 20-minute session afterwards. Mm-hmm. It wasn't on video. That was the premise. You could record it, but it wasn't like for video purposes. It was more of a sit-down with the Bucks beat writers. Matt, you and I were there representing Pewter Report. And the more we talked to Liam Cohen, the more excited I think we got about what he is able to do from a play calling standpoint, about the continuity that will help this team, I think, kind of pick up where they left off, but also improve in some areas. And I think the running game is one of those areas that we really might see some improvement in. He was very excited about the opportunity to work with Rashad White and the potential that he sees in him. And it was interesting. One of the things he said about Rashad White was something you and I have kind of talked about from the beginning of the season when we were a little down on Rashad White as a running back because he wasn't hitting the gas, right? Mm-hmm. He wasn't getting vertical fast enough. And I think as he became more and more comfortable with A, being the starting running back for this team, and B, finding the holes and understanding this new blocking scheme, I think he did pick up the pace and get faster. We saw more of those breakout runs from Rashad White at the end of the season. But that was something he noticed right away was Rashad White's got to really kind of get a little faster into the hole and show a little bit more sense of urgency as a runner. And I agree with that.
Yeah, Scott, that's actually something that you had brought up quite a long time ago, even going back to training camp, which essentially your statement was that, like, it's difficult to try to get the run game going in training camp and things like that because there's not as much physicality, especially when it comes to the run game. Because on a passing play, you know, it's 4 or 5 seconds, you're trying to hold your blocks, that's about it. Run game type of stuff, that's where you see some of the worst injuries, more contact, which kind of leads to things like that. So teams try to stay away from it, and you can only get better in the preseason games, which, as we know, the starters hardly play, especially in today's day and age, and throughout the season. So I don't think it's a surprise at all that Rashad White and the team as an offense got better, which I understand still worse than the league running the ball, but by their own measurements got better running the football halfway through the season and in the last 2 months of the season because they just had more reps running the football. So that brings us to Liam Cohen, who one of my favorite things that he said up at the podium was, I'm all about physicality. I'm all about a physical run game. I take pride in a good run game and marrying the run game with the passing game. And I think I enjoyed the, I guess, quote unquote, private session more with Liam Cohen than I did like when he was up at the podium. Because when you have those big press conferences and all the cameras are there and everything like that, naturally you're going to be buttoned up and yeah. want to be on your P's and Q's. It's almost like doing a presentation in school where you know everybody's watching.
Right.
Then you feel like you know someone a little bit more when you see them behind the scenes. And he was exactly. still, I wouldn't say like buttoned up in like a stuffy type of way. Like he definitely let his hair down a little bit in terms of just like getting to know him more and coming across. Like one of my favorite things talking with him was about, oh man, I remember when I first got my start at Brown and I was cutting up videos and making the hype videos and things like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've always kind of gravitated towards the origin stories of whether it's coaches or superheroes or whoever. Or villains as well.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I really enjoyed that part of him. And I think the biggest thing, especially for a guy in his role of a play caller, a guy that used to be a quarterback, is how does he regurgitate information or how does he explain things, not even to players, but like to us, the media, that we can understand where he's coming from and how to get points across. And I felt he really did that in our two conversations with him yesterday.
Yeah, I agree. And I think too, I've seen it having sat in Todd Bowles' office and had, you know, kind of private conversations with him, vastly different than the press conference Todd Bowles that we see. I mean, he was much more guarded, much more generic, maybe a little bit boring. Whereas when you're in his office and it's just a conversation, it's completely different Todd Bowles. And that's the kind of guy that the coaches and the players see, that version of Todd Bowles. And so, yeah, I did see a little bit of a difference too, from being up at the podium with the lights on and the cameras, and then just kind of that almost informal Q&A session that we had with Rick Stroud, Jenna Lane, Greg Allman, JC Allen, and John Romano, a couple others were there as well. And it was more of an intimate kind of roundtable session. And I just think that he's got a lot of answers to some of the questions that the Buccaneers need to have answered to get this offense getting to the next level, getting that running game improved. And again, kind of picking up where they left off a little bit.
Yes.
He said that the terminology is not going to change so much. Mm-hmm. It might be, you know, Dixie rather than Daisy. It might, you know, those types of things, but it's still very conceptually the same. But with a new spin on it. And one of the things that I think that we're going to see is a more improved run game. You look at the offense last year at Kentucky, right? And it's different because it's college versus pro.
He did say Georgia.
Yeah, you got to play Georgia, you know, LSU, Alabama, those types of teams in the SEC. So it's the best conference in football, in my opinion. I know SEC haters will probably hate me saying that. I'm a Big 12 guy.
Big 10. I think the Big 10's a little top heavy. It's like you got Michigan and Ohio State, and that's about it. Where the SEC, like, hey, Missouri popped up this year.
Exactly. So, it's more balanced. But and I think that's what you're going to see from Liam Cohen's offense. When you look at what they were able to do at Kentucky with a running back who I like, and I'm going to tell you right now, is going to be in our next mock draft, which I'm working on today, which will be dropping tomorrow. I'll give you a little bit of a hint there. He was at the Senior Bowl, which also checks a box for Jason Light, right? But Ray Davis, who Florida fans know intimately because he went off for over 200 yards against them. But this was a guy that averaged 5.7 yards in his first and only season at Kentucky and 199 carries, right? So he was the bell cow there at Kentucky. And then you look at their run pass kind of ratio. It wasn't 50-50, right? Because you had Devin Leary throw for 2,700 yards, but they're not a pass first team at Kentucky where he threw for 4,000 yards, right? And they only ran, you know, the ball for 800 yards. Now this was in the SEC. You have to be able to run the ball, right? To have that balance. There's so many good pass rushers, so many good defenders in the secondary that you can't lean on the opportunity to drop back and throw the ball all that much. So Leary, who came from North Carolina State, threw the ball 371 times, but not even for 3,000 yards. And so I think we are going to see the Buccaneers have that commitment to run the ball. Maybe not as stubbornly, Matt and Peter people, as we saw with Dave Canales, where it was kind of force-fed at some inopportune times. But he is going to try to achieve that balance through some different blocking schemes. And that probably leads us to the new offensive line coach hire.
Yes, absolutely. We'll get to that in just a moment, talking about Kevin Carberry, the new offensive coach. But the last thing I want to expand upon, Scott, with Liam Cohen and Ray Davis, is how many times do we see, especially in the NFL, whether it's a college coach comes and then he picks like one of his former players or a player that played with someone else? I think the best example is Joe Burrow, who they drafted the wide receiver, Jamar Chase. And obviously they had that combination. So you could see it even more with, okay, Cohen's got a plan, especially for the run game.
Yeah.
The Bucs kind of need another running back. Why not get the guy that he just worked with all of last season? So that can be a hit the nail on the head type of pick there, type of movement for the Buccaneers. But yes, the other news that came out later last night really was that there is a new offensive line coach for the Buccaneers. His name is Kevin Carberry, and even though he's wearing a Rams getup there, Bucs are actually poaching him from the New Orleans Saints. He was their assistant special teams coach in New Orleans last season, but before that was with the LA Rams. So there is familiarity with offensive coordinator Liam Cohen. I'm not going to go through the whole background of Carberry, but he did play college football at Ohio University, not Ohio State, Ohio University. So he played in the MAC, tried to latch on with an NFL team. Ended up playing in the Arena Football League for my beloved New York Dragons for a season and then won an Arena Bowl with the Philadelphia Soul and Scott's good friend, John Bon Jovi. But anyway, coaching-wise, did a little high school and college, got his big break in the NFL around 2014, 2015 with the Dallas Cowboys, where his offensive line coach was Bill Callahan, who is a very well-respected offensive line coach.
He's just about as good as it gets when it comes to offensive line coaches.
And so Callahan was the offensive line coach and the offensive play caller for the Cowboys at the time, and then went over to the Washington Redskins, which Carberry did follow as well and had the same role, assistant offensive line coach. That's where he met a guy by the name of Sean McVay. So anyway, after a brief stint with Stanford, he became the offensive line coach for the Los Angeles Rams, where McVay was the head coach. And that's where he met Liam Cohen back in the 2022 season, I should say, before Cohen went back to Kentucky. And then last year he was with the Saints. So there's definitely a lot of familiarity between Cohen and Kevin Carberry. Carberry was also the offensive line coach when the Rams won their Super Bowl in 2021, the year after the Bucs won the Super Bowl. So you have an offensive line coach, which is funny because he played defensive line in college, but then eventually became an offensive line coach. But a guy that has experience with a championship winning team, obviously the Rams, they had a stud at offensive tackle with Andrew Whitworth for many years. And now he gets to work with a stud in Tristan Wirfs. And really, this is a great opportunity for Carberry because he gets to be an offensive line coach once again versus being an assistant offensive line coach. And there is great potential with this Buccaneers offensive line. You heard me mention Tristan Wirfs, what a stalwart he is. Gedeki, tons and tons of improvement in year two, playing his natural position of right tackle. You know they want to upgrade at center. You got Cody Mauch going into his second year. So it's not a finished product with the Bucs offensive line by any means, but this is a great opportunity for Carberry and obviously Liam Cohen to take what is a little bit of a claymation of an offensive line right now that's not fully formed and cemented just yet, and really just put the screws into what they want to make this offensive line, whether it's physical, whether it's, you know, crazy athletic. You heard Liam Cohen talk about Tristan Wirfs as a weapon. So I like the idea that this is familiarity between Liam Cohen and Kevin Carberry. And the Bucs needed a change along the offensive line if they want to improve, especially in that run game. And that was an emphasis for the Rams, even with all the flashiness of Matt Stafford and Cooper Kupp. And they obviously did their damage, but they got it done on the ground too. So I don't really think there's room for many complaints about this hire.
I agree. And I think so much of offensive line is mentality. I really do. I mean, technique has its place for sure. You can lose easily on technique, right? By being over aggressive, by not having your hand placement, your footwork, et cetera, not having your hat in the hole. So you have to be technically sound. At the same time, though, I felt as if under Harold Goodwin and Joe Gilbert, there was so much positional blocking, right? Getting in someone's way, positioning yourself to open some creases and holes. And I felt like there was not enough physicality. You look around the league and there's other teams that whose offensive linemen are taught to push the pile, right? And I just think that there's a little bit of a lost art in that, that sometimes when you have a running back that on, second and six, picks up 4 or 5 yards, right? And the offensive linemen, they kind of, engage, position themselves, and then they turn into spectators. And you saw Ryan Jensen in his prime run down the field and help push the pile. And sometimes that 4-yard run on second and six turns into 6 or 7 and picks up the first down because the offensive linemen are following the play, engaging. And as that running back gets stood up by, say, a linebacker, now all of a sudden you got a 300-pound dude pushing that running back a couple of extra yards to pick up the first down and move the chains. So you're not 3rd and 1 or 3rd and 2. You're at 1st and 10.
Yep.
And so it's that type of physicality. And I've talked to people within the Bucs organization that they grew a little frustrated because that was not really being taught and enforced to the degree that some in this organization wanted to see. And I think Ryan Jensen did a lot of that on his own. And he also, that kind of rubbed off on some of his offensive line mates. Ali Marpet was kind of known for doing that too. But over the last couple of years without Jensen in the lineup, you really haven't seen that as much. And I think that's a natural trait that Luke Goedeke has. I think Cody Nauk has that in him. And that's something that can be taught. And sometimes Jensen would get a little too carried away and be a little too late to the pile and get those 15-yarders. Yeah. And that he did a good job of dialing it back a little bit and being smarter about that. But that tone setting, I think, is just as important as the technique. And so I hope that this new hire, Kevin Carberry, has that type of mentality. I think the knock their junk in the dirt, style.
Yeah.
Trying to keep it clean. But there is some of that where you want to pancake the dude, take him to the ground. And I don't think that we saw enough of that from this offensive line. And there, again, are the cast of characters to get that done. Mauk, Goedeke, and Werps are the three names that come to mind. And you know what, Matt? Those are the only three guys that might end up remaining in the starting lineup because we could have a change at center. Yep. And I think we will have a change at left guard.
Yeah, because Aaron Stinney's unrestricted free agent, free agent. So with Stinney being an unrestricted free agent, I don't think he's going to have a gigantic market the way that Alex Kappa did a couple of seasons ago. But I don't think it's the worst thing. Like, if Stinney's back, great, got no problem with that. But if they want to go in a different direction, maybe I know Matt Filer was a veteran, but like a veteran that has a little more mobility and maybe isn't necessarily on his last legs. But I think you're spot on, Scott, with the attitude that Ryan Jensen brought, and maybe this offensive line needs that a little bit, but Jensen was really able to turn the tables, because you're absolutely right. He used to do it too much, cross that line, and then would get the 15-yard unsportsmanlike conduct penalty.
Yeah.
Towards his end run with the Bucs, he was the one drawing the unsportsmanlike conduct penalties on the defense. He famously did it in the Super Bowl as well. And Luke Goedeke has all of the intangibles to be that next enforcer guy, attitude-driven player, because you saw it in some of the mic'd up type of things. Tristan Wirfs will always be the nice guy, but he can turn it on when he wants to. And Cody Mauk, love talking to him, friend of the program's, been on this podcast.
Yep.
Let's also be real, though. If you're willingly going to walk around in public with no front teeth, You got to be a little bit crazy to play offensive line. And I mean that with the highest amount of compliments for Cody Mauch. So I think especially when he gets more comfortable just being in the NFL, remember, he came from North Dakota State, living on that side of the world, coming to Tampa, Florida, when he's a pale, redheaded guy. I think there was more of an adjustment than I think people realize, just the way of living, you know, in a new situation. So, and if Cody Mauch, we've already said he was ahead of what Luke Goedeke was when he was a rookie starting offensive guard. Can you imagine if Cody Mauch makes the similar type of jump that Luke Goedeke made in year two with Mauch going into year two? I mean, my goodness, that's nothing but fantastic news for the Bucs. Now, he has to do it. He has to put in the work. But, man, I mean, there's a lot of optimism to like about this Bucs offensive line moving forward after a couple of tweaks and adjustments, which you see every year anyway.
Yeah. Also, we want to wish Christopher Oxentine a happy birthday.
Happy birthday to you, Christopher Oxentine, over in Overland Park,
that's
Kansas.
Right. My old
happy
stomping
grounds. Happy birthday to you. Yeah. Anyway, thank you for watching the show. Thank you for the super chat. And hope you have a fantastic birthday where everything you want it to be is what it will be.
Yep. I'll be catching up with you April 23rd. That's my birthday for number 52. So there we go.
There you go. And thank you to Katamax for this $5 super chat, who says, third year, third different offensive coordinator for Coach Bowles. Pewter Report kept me sane after Canales left. I hope this is a good hire that we keep for more than one season. Yeah, so it is the third offensive coordinator in three seasons. But let's also remember, they got rid of Byron Leftwich by choice. Like, they chose to try to upgrade an offensive coordinator, which I think, looking at it now, they did upgrade. And it was out of the Bucs' hands and out of Todd Bowles' hands that Dave Canales got a head coaching job, unfortunately, within the division. So you're going to see him twice a season and all the time. So it's not like, you know, the Browns come to mind where it's like every other year they have a new head coach and a new offensive coordinator and a new quarterback. It's not because there was futility with the Buccaneers organization. That's just how it goes sometimes.
No, yeah, I'm with you for sure. And I feel like I know it's early and this guy has not called a play yet. He hasn't even met all of his offensive staff. They still have a wide receivers coach. He has not met all the offensive players. He has not had one OTA practice yet, but you just get a feeling. And we had a good feeling about Dave Canales, Matt. We did. Yeah. And we even said, look out. Don't be surprised if Baker Mayfield and Dave Canales end up being more successful than Tom Brady and Byron Leftwich were in 2022. And that proved to be the case. They scored more points. They had an average more points, almost 21 points per game, where Leftwich and Brady only scored 18 points a game back in 2022. So I think this is third offensive coordinator and third year for Todd Bowles as head coach. But so far, so good. We had very good feelings about Dave Canales. We were proved right about that. I think we have similar good feelings about Liam Cohen. And I think we're going to be proved right about that. I think this is the next step of the Bucs offense. The key, of course, is getting Baker Mayfield back.
Yes.
And Mike Evans. And if that's the case, Jason Light will add to the talent on this offense, you know, with an offensive lineman for sure. And we'll have a new offensive lineman, not Jackson Powers Johnson, in this particular mock draft that's coming out tomorrow at 4 o'clock. Eastern time. So set your alarms on your phones. 4 o'clock on Thursday, we'll be dropping our Pewter Report 7-round Bucs mock draft 2.0. And it's got another very good offensive lineman early in the draft that I think you're going to like as well.
Very excited to check it out. And Scott, you mentioned that Liam Cohen is trying to meet with everybody, has met with some players already. He did say he met with Luke Goedeke. And, of course, of all the places he ran into Luke Goedeke, it was in the weight room.
Yeah. Go figure, right?
Yeah. Shocker. Yeah, I believe I said that, too, when he's like, I met Luke Goedeke in the weight room. I said, shocker. And then he continued to expand. But, you know, what's cool is, like, you know, Luke Goedeke works out all the time. He works out with Tristan Wirfs a ton. Sometimes you need a little, like, pick-me-up or something to get you going when you begin that workout. And I don't think Luke Goedeke necessarily needs to come to me for advice, but if I were going to give him advice, I would say you want to get started working out, have a Celsius energy drink, as Scott has his, in his hands right there. I'd even specifically go further and say, have the new Celsius Essentials.
So good.
New product line that the Bucks have, that the Celsius great people over there have out. Check out the Dragonberry flavor, the Blue Crush. A lot of awesome new flavors. It's a big can. You saw Scott holding it up a moment ago. Giant can of Celsius Essentials. There's 275 milligrams of caffeine, but no sugar at all. If you want to pick up a Celsius Essential, you can get them at any 7-Eleven nationwide. You can also pick up a three-pack variety pack of Celsius over at Walmart, and they are coming to Amazon sooner rather than later. So if you need to know where to pick up any Celsius, it could be the Essentials, could be some of the OG flavors like the Cucumber Lime, Sparkling Orange, Fuji Apple Pear, Arctic Vibe, Sparkling Watermelon. If you want to know where to find them, go to the Celsius store locator, punch in your address, and I'll tell you the closest location to pick one up. Could be a health and fitness store, your local convenience store, or even better, your bodega.
Bodega.
And once you keep going to your bodega and you know you love it, but you want to get it in bulk, you can.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And I'd recommend getting that variety pack because variety is the spice of life. Yeah, mango, passion fruit, another great flavor out there, as Chris H. says. So get that variety pack. Go back to Amazon. Click on the subscribe and save. Have it sent to your residence whenever you want. Just make Celsius your number one pick. Shout out to Celsius, the official energy drink of the Pewter Report podcast.
Yep, good Scott, stuff.
We got a fair amount of videos to get to from Liam Cohen. We mentioned on yesterday's show, we have so many that this is going to be kind of a part two of the reactions to Liam Cohen and everything that we saw from him. Let's get it started with that run game. Because we already talked about it and just hearing his philosophy on it and working with Rashad White as well, what his envisionment, I don't know if that's a word, but his vision for Rashad White.
Game that's been, it hasn't been successful here. The last couple of years that the Bucks have been in the very bottom of the league. What is your level of commitment to the run game and how do you incorporate the run game in the pass game and have that marriage work for you in the offense?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Is the marriage of the run and the pass is what we're striving for. We're striving for balance, but to be explosive in both the run and the pass. That's something that I honestly take a lot of pride in. I think that's something that Sean, I learned a lot from Sean in terms of the run game when I first got to LA. We understood and tried to study defense more than we tried to study ourselves. How to understand gap integrity, fits, fallbacks, things of that nature, to be able to try to be able to, dissect the defense. How can we also run into better pictures, right? So now we're talking about, well, can we put a little bit more on the guys? Can we put a little bit more on the quarterback and the center and some of those guys to be able to change the play, get us into really advantageous looks so that we run into better numbers, into better looks, into cleaner looks. And that's something that I think these guys are eager for, just talking through to some of those guys. So some of them right now, they're eager for more, and it's something that it's our philosophy as well.
Speaking of the run game, you'll get to work with Rashad White this year. He's been important, taking strides last season, not just as a runner, but what he means to the passing game as well. So what's your excitement level to work with him?
Pretty dynamic dude. I mean, I evaluated him coming out of Arizona State. We were excited about him in L.A. as well. And, just the ability to be able to motion him out of the backfield, align him in the back, in empty, free release him out of the backfield. He showed that he can do some of those things, and that's not easy to handle as a young back, to be able to do both the run and the pass at a pretty high level. And now, hey, how do we get better at sticking our foot in the ground and getting vertical and being violent with our shoulder pads down and getting downhill on people? But man, he's eager. I just met him in the weight room, and he's an eager dude. He's excited and wants to get back to work and run the football. But he seems like he could be a good all-purpose back.
Yeah, it's interesting. Right. When you've got you got Liam Cohen there at one buck in your place, right, for one day. And we're talking February 6th, right? This is the off season, man. This is vacation time. This is rest your body time. This is recharge. Football season is a long grind. I mean, Matt, you and I feel it, and we don't play a down of football, right? But it's pretty much at least a 6, if not a 7 day a week job for us, right? And we're not out there tackling people and running through piles and all of that. But it's a grind. It's a grind for these players. And where did Liam Cohen run into Luke Getteke yesterday? In the weight room. Where did he run into Rashad White yesterday? In the weight room. Right? I mean, these are guys that are committed to their craft. And, yeah, they're going to take vacations and have some downtime. But they're eager for this 2024 season already. And they didn't like the way the 2023 ended. They felt the arrow was pointing up for this team. I agree. I think it is. And it just says a lot that his first interactions with some of these players that he's going to be coaching are in the weight room, Matt.
That is a championship mindset. And I can confirm that because, funny enough, last night as I'm like getting ready to go to bed, I throw on NFL Network and it's like one of those a football life things. And it's like Jerry Rice, who I think many of us are in agreement is the greatest wide receiver of all time. And they were just saying like how intense Jerry Rice was to the point that there was 1 year, like after they won all the Super Bowls with Montana, but they hadn't won yet with Steve Young, and they lost to the Cowboys in the NFC Championship game. And then like 2 weeks later was the Pro Bowl, and he ran into Michael Irvin, and he told Michael Irvin, just so you know, like I'm already working on next season. And right. Michael Irvin's like, what? Like this guy's crazy. And then the next year they win the Super Bowl with Steve Young. I think they destroyed the Chargers in that game.
No, they did. Yeah.
And Steve Young said, because they talked to a bunch of players. Steve Young said 3 days later, we were back in San Francisco and I was at the facility and the facility was completely empty. And I look outside and all I see is Jerry Rice with the helmet on, catching passes from a coach and running routes and things like that. Yeah. He's like, this is 3 days after winning the Super Bowl. That's just how Jerry Rice was wired. But Jerry Rice obviously has an extremely decorated career, a high number of Super Bowls. And like we said, the greatest wide receiver of all time. Yep. He actually was at the Senior Bowl watching his son Brendan during the week. So I'm over on the sideline. And
Brendan would look good in red and pewter. Yeah. Second round.
Wouldn't hate that by any means. But I say all of this to show that, you know, the greatest of all time are doing this. And I can't speak for the other NFL teams out there who's working out, who's in the weight room at the moment, but you love seeing that commitment from Rashad White, who was on vacation. I watch his Instagram stories. Yeah. He was on vacation, came back and immediately hit the gym. Right. Luke Getteke, who eats, sleeps, and breathes.
He's
Luke the lifter. It's no surprise that Tristan Wirfs essentially won that whole contest for the offensive line in the Pro Bowl that we talked about the other day. It comes with a commitment, a mentality, a mindset. And I think that's what helped the Bucs, you know, when they were going through their losing 6 of 7 and really losing their grip on the whole season, to not waver, to not flinch, as Baker Mayfield had said earlier today on one of his million radio appearances during the Super Bowl. And I don't know, I just love seeing that. I love hearing that. And I think these guys will be even more than eager to hit the ground running with this new offense, but similar offense as well with Liam Cohen at the head.
Yeah, no, I agree. I definitely agree. And good friend of mine, Kenrick Montgomery, who's a big Gator fan, says he likes Ray Davis a lot. I do too. And we saw him make a fantastic catch at the Senior Bowl.
Yep.
He's a guy that he says Kentucky had huge plays in the passing game, which came off the run game. And Kenrick's exactly right. Ray Davis is a guy like Rashad White that can do it all. That he can catch the ball, he can run it. He is a three down back, not a third down back, but a three down back. A guy that can get the job done on all three downs, and that's so important, Matt. Because when you look at his production last year and his lone season at Kentucky, 199 carries, 1,129 yards, a respectable 5.7 yard average. That's good in the SEC. 14 touchdowns. But then this is where it gets really fun. When you look at what he's able to do in the receiving game, 33 catches, 323 yards, seven touchdowns, seven of his touchdowns, of his 21 touchdowns came in the passing game. And if you look at that average, 9.8 yards per catch, that's what Rashad White had at Arizona State. And we've seen his transition from being a guy that did it all at Arizona State to being a guy that can do it all in the NFL. He finished fourth overall in terms of all-purpose yardage, rushing and receiving, 990 yards rushing, just 10 yards shy of 1,000, and over 500 receiving yards. This is a very similar dynamic guy that is built differently, about 5'9", 215, so he's more compact. But he has got some great hands, and I think, Matt, as we're continuing to kind of talk about it, maybe finish up with the running game, if something were to happen to Rashad White last year, I think disaster strikes, because as much as Chase Edmonds was able to, when healthy, be able to provide a little spark here or there as a change of pace back, Keyshawn Vaughn was kicked off the team, essentially. Good riddance, goodbye. But they didn't have a guy that could step in and be anywhere close to the producer that Rashad White was. And I think they need that security blanket going forward. They need another guy that's capable of coming in for stretches, maybe a couple games, right, if Rashad gets hurt, and being able to produce at that level, running and receiving.
Yeah, I think in today's day and age, you essentially need to be a three-down back or a back that can do a little bit of everything. Because gone are the days of, Adrian Peterson's just going to run for 200 yards and destroy you. Like, even Derrick Henry can do it as a receiver. Now, the Titans had Tajay Spears last year as a rookie, so he didn't need to play that role as much. But yeah, I was thinking about that too going into this season. It's like, I like Rashad White as RB1, but last year was his first full season as a full-time starter, and he was dragging at the end of the season just trying to stay healthy. And unfortunately, it's just very rare that a starting running back is healthy for all 17 games, because they collide, bang into players, and have the most physical collisions, probably more than any other position outside of the offensive line and the defensive line. So you definitely need that RB2. And like we said, Chase Edmonds is probably better as an RB3 than an RB2, which kind of makes me wonder about the whole Sean Tucker situation. Because I get that Sean Tucker was undrafted and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But wasn't the whole reason why he was undrafted was because he had the heart issue and the medical issue? And it's like, well, if he didn't have that, he would probably be like a third
fourth
or
fourth round pick. Yeah.
So why all of a sudden is it like, well, he cleared his medical, so now we have this third round, fourth round guy as an undrafted free agent. Now, all of a sudden, he's just out of the mix and like isn't really getting that much consideration. Yeah. Is it just a pass blocking thing? Are the Bucs moving on too quickly from Sean Tucker? Or who knows? Maybe he elevates his game this year, and now they got a stable of running backs if they draft either Davis or another running back.
I'm with you, Matt. I think that's certainly certainly worth considering. And I wouldn't be opposed to bringing Chase Edmonds back, at least to training camp, right, on a one-year deal.
Yeah.
I think he did have some value and certainly was better than Keyshawn Vaughn, who they jettisoned just after midseason. And, you know, we'll see. Again, our latest mock draft 2.0 is going to be coming out tomorrow at 4 p.m. We're not going to talk about it on tomorrow's podcast. Matt and I are going to be gone, but we'll address that on Monday's podcast. That'll be the topic. And we'll kind of go through the logic of the draft selections. And, you know, Matt, we just came back from the Senior Bowl, and there's going to be some Senior Bowl guys in this mock draft. And, you know, the Buccaneers drafted five guys from the Senior Bowl last year and five from the Senior Bowl before that. And Jason Light has drafted 27 players from the Senior Bowl altogether, dating back to 2014. So keep an eye out for that for sure. And we're going to roll on with more Liam Cohen talk here.
Yes, we will. But first, let's get to the super chat from Josh Weiss. Thank you, Josh, for the $4.99 super chat. He says, do we get a comp pick for Dave Canales? I keep hearing he's the only current Hispanic coach, but don't know if that applies to the rule.
Yeah, well, again, it's crazy with these rules. With the compensatory picks, there's teams now that are really kind of protesting the fact that the 49ers keep getting compensatory picks for all of these coaches and front office people that they've employed that are minorities that get opportunities, and the 49ers are stockpiling third round picks from this. And it's like, well, that was the rule. Now, this is what I don't understand. And it's a little maddening to a degree, because the whole point is to promote and elevate more minorities into head coaching positions, right? That's correct. The stated reasoning for the rule. All right. Well, Todd Bowles was essentially promoted from defensive coordinator to head coach. Correct. Yet the NFL said, well, that's an internal promotion and it doesn't apply because he didn't go from one team to the next. And to me, that's idiotic. And quite honestly, that's par for the course for the NFL, which is literally one of the stupidest organizations out there. It just is. Their rules and systems don't make a lot of sense, right? For everything from what the hell is roughing the passer anymore to what is pass interference, especially on a Hail Mary play.
This guy gets a 7-game suspension for like smoking weed, and this guy gets 2 games for having a hit and run and aggravated assault.
Exactly. Yeah, I totally agree. So the Bucs got nothing, despite the fact that they hired Todd Bowles as a minority head coach, right? So I don't understand that. The organization was furious that they didn't get any compensatory picks for that, because that is, again, the stated goal of the rule, more minority head coaches. The Buccaneers have checked that box more than any other team. 4 minority head coaches, right?
Yeah.
Tony Dungy, Raheem Morris, Lovie Smith, and now Todd Bowles. 4. There are some organizations that don't even have any in their history. Dallas Cowboys is one of those. The Patriots just had their first one in Gerard Mayo after all these years, right? So there's that. Your question about Canales, well, the rule says that particular person has to be within your organization for 2 years.
Why?
Why? Why 2 years as opposed to 1 year? Right. I mean, don't the Buccaneers deserve credit for hiring Dave Canales, making him an offensive coordinator, continuing to elevate him from a position coach with the Seahawks to a coordinator position, where in 1 year he was so good under working for another minority head coach in Todd Bowles that he gets a head coaching job. Again, mission accomplished. That's what the intent of the rule is for. But yet the Buccaneers don't get rewarded for it because, well, he was only there for 1 year. Come on, NFL. This is just a joke.
It's an absolute joke. And you're right. The NFL does so many things wrong. I'm just waiting for what the big issue is going to be at the Super Bowl this year. Because remember the whole field? The NFL pays billions of dollars to get everything right. And, oh, we hired this guy to get the field correct. And all everybody complained about in last year's Super Bowl was everybody was sliding left and right because the field was too wet. I'm waiting for them to do something else stupid and idiotic this year. It'll probably be another call by the ref or something dumb, but I'm just waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Yeah.
Hey, why don't we cheer ourselves up?
I was going to say, just to answer this year, maybe a pick for Devin White leaving. Well, remember, if he's going to leave this year, it's going to be for next year. So there won't be any compensatory picks this year outside of an extra 7th rounder that they get for Mike Edwards going to Kansas City last year. Woo. What they do is they look at which players have signed with you in free agency and for how much, right? The dollar amount is important. And then how many have left. And then whatever that offset is, that determines whether you're going to get the highest, which is a 3rd-round pick or a 4th-round, 5th-round, 6th-round, or 7th-round compensatory pick. So the Bucs this year will only get 1 compensatory pick. It'll be a 7th-rounder. They don't have a 5th-rounder, so they will have 7 picks, their own picks in rounds 1, 2, 3, and 4, no pick in round 5, their own picks in 6 and 7, and then the extra compensatory pick in the 7th round. That's how it sets up right now. We'll see if Jason Light makes any trades. I doubt it. But, you know, he did trade Shaq Mason and got an extra pick last year, so we'll see what happens.
Would you look at that? They lose Mike Edwards, a safety. They signed Ryan Neal, also a safety, but Ryan Neal could not get many stops in the regular season. Couldn't even stop the Bucks from getting a compensatory pick. So at least this time, Ryan Neal, helps out the Buccaneers. But all this anger and frustration about the NFL and their rules, things like that, that just don't make sense. Why don't we cheer ourselves up a little bit with some more video from Liam Cohen?
Let's do it.
This one in particular, we talked about it a little bit on yesterday's show, but this is one of my favorite answers that Liam Cohen had from yesterday.
Still, he's a guy that, you know, when you're playing teams, they're keying in on him, and that can make every rep really hard.
Right.
So just, I guess, how is your experience knowing, having to kind of help design solutions to be able to still get the ball into his hands? How can that help potentially with Mike Evans?
That's a great question. That's something that was asked a lot, and we had to do in L.A. a ton because we knew that, you know, that offense ran through Coop. And things have changed a little bit there, but, you know, he's gotten a little bit more help, but things ran through him, and we had to be creative, right, with whether it was by formation, alignment, where we would put him, how we would end up in the final formation. You know, just by three different formations, double Dixie and Daffy, we just moved the F in three different positions. So ultimately, at the end of the day, we have to be able to move him around by formation, but also motion. Do we start him in the backfield? Do we bring him in the backfield and now try to shuffle him out and be able to get him matched up on a Will or a nickel or a backer or a down safety? You know, Mike obviously being the size that he is and his ability to be able to track the football down the field, but also his ability to get in and out of cuts at that size, man, to be able to put him inside a little bit more and to be able to run some of those option routes and choice routes on the inside, man, I think that's a winning edge and something that we'd like to be able to utilize.
And then another great answer that he had about left tackle, Tristan Wirfs.
What does having a left tackle like Tristan Wirfs allow you to do as a play caller?
Yeah, I mean, obviously those guys, you know, get paid for a reason, right? And they, he's a special talent. I've heard great things about him as a worker, making the adjustment, moving from the right side to the left. I mean, that's not easy to do, and he did it pretty seamlessly. So really excited to be able to get to work with him because, you know, weapons aren't just out on the perimeter. You know, weapons are up front as well. And when you have a weapon like that up front at that position, man, you can utilize him by pulling him around, get him in the screen game, use him on in the pin and pull game or whatever it is, cutting off three techniques, and then obviously in pass protection. So weapons are all over, and we have a weapon at left tackle.
So a big takeaway for me from those two responses and other things that Cohen had to say yesterday, a big takeaway that I have is what I like about Cohen is that I think he's got a really great balance between old school mentality of being a football coach and new school mentality of, like, I use analytics, but it's not going to be the end all be all of every single decision that I make. And to say that Tristan Wirfs is a weapon, I've never heard an offensive coordinator or a head coach say our lineman is a weapon in the way that our skill players are. And I was a big fan of that response because it's true. I mean, Tristan Wirfs is one of the best players in the league and on this football team. He doesn't get the ball much besides that one time where there was a fumble and he started running down the field and there's a penalty on the play. But why not try to utilize Tristan Wirfs, who is a freak of nature athletically, to go on top of what he does as a blocker? Why not to get him in so many different situations that will only help the Bucs move the ball forward? I just really like his thinking and viewpoint of how to run an offense, really.
I agree. And I think one of the biggest bones of contention with the former offensive line coaches, Harold Goodwin and Joe Gilbert, was that the Buccaneers weren't the best screen team. And we saw the screen pass become more used and more effective under Dave Canales than it ever was with Byron Leftwich, right? We saw Rashad White score that touchdown against the Titans. We saw score the touchdown against the Lions in the Super Bowl. That was a short little one. We saw the one in Atlanta, which was a huge game-breaking play. And so those screen passes, that's what I think we're talking about with Tristan Wirfs getting out in space and using that athleticism, not just at the line of scrimmage, but doing that or doing some pin and pull, right? Where you're pulling the tackle and you're pulling the center into the hole and using that athleticism more. We saw a lot of pulling of guards. Sometimes we'd see the backside tackle, Luke Getteke, pull into the hole. We saw that a lot against Atlanta in that fourth quarter where the Bucs just started to rev up that running game and salted that win away, a critical win in Atlanta. But I think we're going to see more athleticism on display. Cody Mauch can get out and run, right? He was the one just about stride for stride with Rashad White on that screen touchdown against the Titans, and also down there leading the charge against the Falcons in that screen pass. So when you have a guy that caught three touchdown passes off screens last year in Rashad White, and when you've got this play caller that the Rams run a lot of screens, right? Kyren Williams, they even run tight end screens with Tyler Higbee, who's a more athletic tight end than the Bucs have. But I think that's what he's talking about, right? And then to go back to talking about Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, using them in those bunch formations, getting them some free releases with some of those crossing routes, confusing the matchup, right? In terms of, is it man coverage or zone? Trying to defend a receiver coming out of a bunch formation, because they're all going just different ways, like fireflies, right? And that's where you can get a step on a defender. And when you're a big body guy like Mike Evans, that's where that quick slant, you know, can turn in. It could be a quick 6-yard slant that turns into a 16-yard gain across the middle of the field. And I think that's kind of what Liam Cohen is envisioning. And for Chris Godwin to work more in the slot, as we talked about yesterday, work in the middle of the field. There's going to be plenty of times where Mike's going to be isolated in that split end position, that X receiver spot where he has made a killing and made a living in Tampa Bay. There's going to be plenty of that. But let's get him inside. Let's find a matchup with Mike against the nickel corner rather than that star Pro Bowl cornerback on the outside. Let's get him matched up against the safety. Let's get him matched up against an inside linebacker who's had to drift over, and Chris Godwin the same thing, right? Instead of battling outside one-on-one against a cornerback, have him against the nickel, have him against the safety, have him against the linebacker, like he thrived in that role under Bruce Arians, where the offense ran through the slot. And I think we're going to see this Liam Cohen offense have the passing game run through the slot as well.
That's the ideal plan. That's the ideal dream, and it'll make it that much more intriguing if you want to pick Mike Evans, Rashad White, or Chris Godwin, or some of the others when you play underdog fantasy next season. You can still do it for the big game coming up on Sunday. Sign up for Underdog Fantasy and their app. Use the promo code Pewter. That's P-W-T-E-R. Get a first deposit bonus when you play on Underdog Fantasy. You make anywhere from 2 to 5 picks, and it doesn't just have to be the NFL. They got it for basketball and hockey, baseball when it comes back, and a lot of other different sports as well, golf and the UFC, which is pretty cool to see as well. So, yeah, make anywhere from 2 to 5 picks. Got to be at least 2 different teams or players on teams, and you're just choosing a number of stats like higher or lower on receiving yards or touchdowns or tackles for a defensive player. If it's hockey, it's shots on goals or points in basketball, or obviously goals in hockey as well. So you can win up to 20 times your money with Underdog Fantasy if you make all of your hits or bets and they hit. So check out Underdog Fantasy. Use that promo code Pewter. That's P-E-W-T-E-R, and get a first deposit bonus with Underdog Fantasy. Got another super chat to get to. Two super chats to get to, actually. Thank you to Paul, a.k.a. Florida Dreamhouse, for the $2 Super Chat. It says, if either Mike Evans or Baker Mayfield leaves, does the other follow? To the same team, I feel like that would be kind of tough. Because
probably not.
Chilling out like team. Over $60 million for two players. So that would be quite difficult. But it wouldn't make Bucs fans feel any better one way or another.
I think the interesting thing is although there's not a great crop of free agent quarterbacks, right? I mean, there's Baker, there's Kirk Cousins, Tannehill, who's oft injured. I don't think the Bucs have any interest in Cousins or Tannehill. So I think that their draft plans would switch dramatically, and they would be looking to draft a quarterback first, in the first round, and maybe trade up to get one, whatever. But it would change dramatically. The benefit, and I'm not suggesting this is a good thing, this is not what the Buccaneers want, but if you don't re-sign Mike Evans or Baker Mayfield, you re-sign one or the other, but not both, you're going to have $25 to $30 million worth of money that you were allocating towards one of those guys freed up to address those replacements. So there is that. it's not like all hope is lost if Mike and Baker don't return, but it certainly that's what the Bucks are hoping for, both of those guys to be back. Meets McGee with a $5 super chat. What will be our plan B if Mike Evans is not re-signed? Draft pick or free agent? Probably both. I think they would draft a receiver in the first round. You might get a Brian Thomas from LSU. The Oregon kid is also probably going to be there. Keon Coleman, maybe from Florida State. Those are some options right there at the end of the first round if Tampa Bay doesn't move up or do something like that. Redfish 499 super chat. Thank you. You all around the league, do y'all feel some owners would have still said no to a strong coach due to race? All I care about is wins and improvement. I think that's the case. I think that the climate certainly around the league has changed. You know, you look at Dave Canales, a Hispanic coach, in Carolina, the Raiders promoted Antonio Pierce, an African-American coach to that position. I think if you're looking for proof positive that the time is changing, Bill Belichick, granted he's old, but he's white, and he is the all-time winningest coach in the NFL in the present day, excluding, of course, Don Shula, who he's chasing, and George Halas. But, I mean, out of all the coaches here, it's him, and Andy Reid is kind of on his tail. But Bill Belichick didn't get hired. And I think that speaks volumes about trying to find the best fit for the organization. And sometimes for a certain team, it's a Dave Canales or it's an Antonio Pierce. We saw D'Amico Ryans get hired last year.
Yeah.
So I think times are certainly changing, and it's more about the content of the character and the coaching ability as opposed to what color you are.
And as it should be. I think it's great that there's more black coaches and Hispanic coaches with Canales, and even like the Panthers, we've all said, like, you know, Tepper you don't want to work with and he's kind of crazy, but he's still looking at, they want the best guy available in their eyes. It is Dave Canales. And if I'm not mistaken, I think the Panthers' last owner got essentially kicked out because of like racist comments that he made. So there's no room for racism in football. And I would hope every team looks at it as, we want the best candidate, not what is the color of their skin. So
that's right.
I'm happy that there's been that change in the NFL.
If you're looking for the best real estate agent, well, we got that guy for you right now. It's Eric Gross and the Eric Gross Group, the official realtor of Pewter Report. The Eric Gross Group has done hundreds of transactions in this current real estate market, and they've got experience in all types of situations. That's what you want, right? You want experience. That's what Eric and his team at the Eric Gross Group bring to the table. Eric, as you probably know by now, is an avid Pewter Report reader and a Tampa native who knows this area like the back of his hand. He and his team have got the market knowledge, the top-notch communication skills, and the commitment to excellent service. That's what sets them apart. Their clients are not just transactions, they're lifelong friends. Here's what I want you to do. If you're thinking about selling your house or if you're in the market to buy a home, give Eric a call. Start the conversation with Tampa Bay Football. Let's start it there. Get to know Eric and see if he's the right real estate agent for you. Give him a call at 513-907-4271. That's 513-907-4271. Or visit his website, housesinfla.com. Check out the inventory. It's a great website with a great layout. You can also check out their open house listings on their social media accounts, Facebook and Instagram, at Eric Gross Group. No matter where you are in your home ownership journey, you're going to feel welcome with the Eric Gross Group, the official realtor of Pewter Report. Again, visit housesinfla.com.
Another great show. Thanks to Liam Cohen for all of his conversations from yesterday's show. As Chris H. says, Scott Reynolds, do you think the Bucks are interested in Joe Milton at 26 to get the fifth-year option? He could sit begging Baker for a year and then start.
I think could sit behind Baker for a year and then start. I don't know, Matt. You and I both saw Joe Milton not look good at all at the Senior Bowl. So
there was one play. It was the last day of practice.
Where he's rolling out to the right in the red zone.
Rolling out to the right side. I can't remember if it was play action or not, but the tight end was right there.
Yeah.
And we're both going, throw it. Why aren't you throwing it? And he held on and he kept running to the sideline. And I think he eventually either threw an incompletion or threw it away or, like, took a sack. Obviously, the quarterback's not getting hit.
Yeah.
I was like, dude, the guy was open
he was open
3 seconds before you even, thought about making a play. not very high on Milton. To be honest, I know we've already covered the Senior Bowl and everything, but the quarterback play at the Senior Bowl
wasn't that good.
I had a lot of excitement going in with Penix and Nix and everyone else in between. They did not live up to par. They did not really move the needle too much for me.
And you know, sometimes that's the benefit of going and seeing these guys live, right? As opposed to the combine where it's the underwear Olympics and they're not really doing football stuff. They're doing weightlifting exercises and track and field stuff. When you see them in the football environment, sometimes the Senior Bowl is as much a thumbs down. That's a good thing. Now we know about this guy as it is a thumbs up, like you get with the Jackson Powers Johnson, where you're like, wow, this guy didn't lose a rep there. The arrow's pointing up. So it serves a purpose either way. And listen, folks, if you want more outstanding Bucks coverage, you know the place to go to. That's PeterReport.com, our website. We want to thank you guys for having record traffic in January and February so far. You can also follow us on social media, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, at Peter Report. And, of course, YouTube, our home for Peter Report TV. Make sure you like our videos and leave us a comment that helps the algorithm, helps us get in front of more awesome Peter people like you guys. So we appreciate you guys. We're going strong with over 13,000. Help us get to 14,000 by subscribing to Peter Report TV.
Please do. So that's going to do it for us on today's show. For Scott Reynolds, I'm Matt Matera saying thanks, everybody, for watching. And we'll see you tomorrow at 4 p.m. for another edition of the Peter Report podcast. Out.
Out. Thank you, Meets McGee.
Thanks for the Meets McGee for the $2 Super Chat.